This is a podcast from the Queen City Podcast Network.
Hello, everyone. My name is Logan, and that, of course, means that you are listening to another episode of the Crown Cast. And Charlotte FC is pretty good at football when they're playing in the bank. When they're playing in Charlotte, the results are coming. How solid, how real these results are, what do these results actually mean? In order to understand the process, in order to dive deeper, you really need a crystal ball, or in my case, you need a Ewan. Hello, Ewan.
I don't know if you can get two things more opposite sides of each other than that, but I appreciate that. Thank you very much. Good to be here.
And you need a Josh. Hello, Josh.
Hey, guys.
Ewan, just let me hype you up. That one wasn't even excessive. That one wasn't even, like, ridiculous, all right?
A crystal ball. I feel like that's quite a big prop. I can do some good analysis stuff, but I'm a bit of a jinx at the moment with some of the predictive stuff. So if I'm telling you to go left and go right, which is a good precursor to talking about football and giving people my thoughts. So yeah, like I said, hey, excited to be here.
you're still predictive, just not accurate, right?
Predictable.
Yeah. Okay. Let's get into it, because there are a couple things we're going to talk about today. We want to talk about the way we set up for the Cincinnati game. We want to talk about the results and both our goal, their goal, what it means, as well as get to some information on the new player, Leo Labada, who recently had his player press conference at the Atrium Health training facility, the new beautiful park that they have set up for the Charlotte FC to train in. And then we will talk about Charlotte FC going away, where we will be playing the New England Revolution. So let's get into the game itself. And there are going to be a couple people that I think we are going to want to talk about. But two of them in particular seem to be popping up more on social media. I'm going to say that politely, than some of the others in this game. I think that this was a game that generally we played quite well, especially given the level of the opposition. For the first half, sort of without a doubt in my mind, and even into points in the second half, I think I can look across the game and say that we connected well through the midfield. We were creating some of those quick dynamic plays that created threat and danger. And I thought we were going to struggle with that against Cincinnati. So one of the people who has consistently been a point of dynamism, words are so hard, a point of dynamism for the team and has created threat and danger is Kerwin Vargas. And Josh, will you talk to me about Kerwin Vargas? Because there's a lot of opinions flying around out there right now.
Yeah, I would actually say that, I was a little surprised. I've somehow missed, I guess, some of the negativity that's come with Kerwin. And that has been good. For me, at least, because he's been quite good, in my opinion, this year. I know we've talked, on previous episodes, especially Ewan has, about how a lot of the good stuff that we are doing is coming through him. And I would have to agree. Even this game, I guess there's some people who are a little upset with some of the missed chances that he created. I do know, and I think it's like the first or second minute, there's a really good through ball to him that he kind of swings through wildly. But with all that said, he still finishes second on the team in XG created at 0.59, which I would also say is not an outrageous amount. So, when we're talking about maybe missed opportunities, maybe what we're talking about opportunities that aren't necessarily there on a silver platter. For me, I look at this guy and I say, who are the building blocks of this team? And he's absolutely one of them. I don't really understand who we could do better with right now. And I'd much rather have a guy who's getting into good positions and we got to figure out how to get him to start finishing those than a guy who just never seems to be in a good position.
Yeah, one of the things I'll touch on Kerwin before I go over to Ewan with it is that I think a lot of the frustration in this particular game came from when he got into good positions. The next action was wild. It was shots way over the bar. It was things that looked like they might have attempted to be crosses, but were nowhere near anybody. It was stuff that you would have said, or maybe people would have been more forgiving if he had hit the ball on target, but it had been a relatively easy to save shot. Because then people could have said, well, he got into a good position. He took a shot. It was a decent shot. It wasn't special, but it was decent. Could have gone in. I think some of the frustration is coming from the fact that he is doing so much well that we are effectively highlighting the fact that he does still have challenges in his game. And he's a young man. He's going to have challenges in his game. I don't think I'm surprising anyone when I say we're not likely at Charlotte FC to have the absolute top tier finished talent of the world who have no flaws in their game. And if that even exists, there was a video going around online of Erling Haaland being unable to pass the ball to his teammates, right? So
League 2 Erling Haaland, according to
Stan. League 2 Erling Haaland. Yeah, I personally don't have any issues with Kerwin Vargas at the moment. I think Kerwin Vargas might have some issues with himself, because I think there are points in the game that he's made huge strides. And now I think it's very clear to him where his next strides should come. But where he's at right now, his development, I have no issues with. Ewan, what are you thinking on Kerwin?
The point about him being in good positions and missing chances and that overall being a good thing that, you know, will eventually sort itself out, I like that point. I think that's true. And we briefly kind of referenced this on a previous pod, the idea of the people who don't believe that finishing isn't a real thing, but kind of the whole point of that philosophy is that the positions that you get into, and if you consistently get into those, positive regression is almost inevitable in the research that those people have done. So if you're getting into the good positions, the technical floor is so high for people who have managed to get into professional football that will eventually regress and the goals will come. So that you can kind of neatly box that off as its own sort of thing, where as long as he keeps getting into the good positions, goals are going to come. I think the fact that he gets into good positions, it almost like it's a good thing, but it's counterintuitive in the way that people speak about him, because if he wasn't able to get on the end of these through balls, if he wasn't doing a good job of winning headers from corners, which is something that we've seen crop up in this in the last game, that he's a target from set pieces now, because we obviously like him as an aerial threat. The fact that he's winning these headers and maybe people are frustrated that he's not getting them on target versus just losing out in these headers and it not registering as a moment at all in the heads of people who are watching the games. Like it's a bit of a blessing and a curse in terms of how he's spoken about. Because now people, instead of it not being anything at all, it's now a case of him missing a chance. But yeah, I think you can definitely point to the fact that he's getting into good positions and confidently say that the goals are going to come. And if the goals aren't coming, like him from being in that position, the eventual threat is going to bring about goals for the rest of the team. If they compensate for that and plan for those areas he's going to get into, it opens up spaces elsewhere, those kind of things. So I'm pretty confident that that's going to work out in the end. There's also the side of his game, if we're talking about it from an overall perspective, that his defensive contributions are really, really valuable. Like in this game, he cropped up a couple of times, tracking back really well and defending difficult areas, especially in transition. And we said, like, he's doing the team a favour by playing on the right side, because we know he'd prefer to be on the left. We thought that was almost a situation where Tavares, who was starting earlier in the year, he prefers to be on the left. It works out better for the team if Vargas is on the right. Now that Diago is in the team and he's still on the right, we kind of touched on this a little bit already. Now I think we can confirm it, both from his performances and that he's stayed there. I think Dean Smith, such an out-of-possession focused coach that we've seen so far, I think he's got him there for that out of possession stuff. I think we can kind of chalk that down as something that's definitely the reason why he's there, at least at the moment. It could well change in the future. But I think he knows that there's little bits of deficiencies in Burn's game, even though Burn has had some decent performances of late, and that Kerwin Vargas can fill that role really well of helping out, being the fifth line defender when the ball is on the other side and covering the wide player. We've come up against a couple of teams who play with wing backs, and he's covered that space really well. So I just overall, like, there's a little bit of conversation about Kerwin, if the finishing's there, if the overall performance is good enough. As far as this team goes as a whole, as the players that we've seen start more often than not, like the 10, 15 players roughly that we've seen the most of this season, like he's way, way, way down the bottom of my worries in terms of players that I am concerned about going forward. I've really been really happy with his performances and was happy again on Saturday with his performance.
Yeah, I can tell you that, you know, if you look across his bar stats, which, you know, if you know the website that you can go on and see their nice little green and red bars, he does have a couple of really interesting ones. One of them is that he clearly does his off the ball work, both defensively and opening up space for the ball to come to him. He is in the 99th percentile, effectively the highest percentile you can be for interceptions, which means that he's doing that off the ball pressing. To be fair, the numbers here for this type of position aren't particularly high. So a little bit of deviation one way or the other could result in a significant shift in the percentile number he's in. But he's also high in blocks. He's high in clearances. He's very high in aerials one. And one of the things that stands out to me the most about his game is his progressive passes received. Part of this is the way we play. It's the way we set up. It's the fact that he is an out ball. But so many of the aerials he wins and so many of the progressive passes that we get out of our box go to him. And as a result, without a lot of speed elsewhere in the team, we talked about this with Mackenzie Gaines when Mackenzie Gaines was here, that nobody else was up there with Mackenzie Gaines because nobody else could be up there with Mackenzie Gaines. I don't think it's quite the same problem. But I do think that there's definitely a level to his attacking efficiencies and his effectiveness that will need to be addressed in time. Josh, I'm going to hit you with this one and get your opinion before we move on. And that is, if you look at Kerwin Vargas's non-penalty XG, his per 90 is 0.11, or in the 9th percentile of similar players. That's not great. So there are some numbers that back up some of the questions. For you, is this just a matter of the team he's in and the position he's in now, and that's going to change? Or does that give you a little bit more cause for pause?
I would say that I think it can give you a little bit of concern. Because you do want that number probably a little bit higher, because it's probably showcasing some of what we've been talking about, where the finishing is a little bit erratic, as opposed to being more controlled. However, I would also say that, as we've alluded to, he's a young player. Mm-hmm. And I think you can sort of look across world football, and wingers especially, I think that there are loads of them who you look at and you say, man, if he learns how to finish, he's going to be a problem, right? Like,
yep.
So this is not a unique thing for Kerwin, and that's why it doesn't worry me so much. I think you can also, you know, FB Ref, which is what we're, you know, alluding to here, you can sort it by, you know, who are you comparing him to, right? Are you comparing him to the next 14 competitions? Or are you comparing him to just Major League Soccer? Because the numbers look slightly better depending on what year you're comparing. And again, all this just shows, I think, what you have is volatility in a young player, which is to be expected. The one thing I will say also with this, though, is you pointed out his progressive passes received. There has not been a lot of volatility with that. That, I think, is a skill of Kerwin Vargas, regardless of who is managing him and what the system is. It appears that that is just who he is as a player, and that's really good, and that's something that you can build off of. And again, you just, I think I'm with you, and where I just tend to think that if a guy gets into a position enough times, eventually good things are going to happen. And I just hope that they start happening sooner than later.
All right. Well, Ewan, I will jump over to you to talk about sort of the midfield balance in general. We have Nikola Petkovic with his first start for the Crown. I think it was a good showing from him. I think he had a couple of spicy moments. You know, he had that back heel early on that was I want to say it's the first, like, tricky in the middle, top of the box pass from a Charlotte FC player I've seen this season that actually went to a Charlotte FC player. I like the spark I'm getting out of Nikola. He clearly has more legs than some other players. But we also saw elements of having Brek Diagata out on the left again, where he was able to come inside and sort of intermingle with the group, as well as Jabril Gianni, who I think we'll talk about more in a little bit. How is the midfield looking for you right now?
Yeah, Petkovic, obviously, someone we spoke about a fair bit when he signed, and then he goes off to Crown Legacy. He's kind of doing his thing there. We've now been given a player who it seems like they want to play a little bit further up the field. For me, the bread and butter was always going to be that he should play deeper, receive the ball off the centre-backs and be in that role. That's the role that I had kind of ideally pegged him for. But I'd also done that in a world where we're playing the football that I envisioned us playing and the football that we played a little bit more under Christian Letanzio. I understand why he's not playing in that role at the moment, because we don't really build up through the midfield. We don't really have a midfielder whose role is to pick the ball up off the centre-backs. So having him there, I suppose maybe you're putting him there because that's traditionally where his best role would be. But in the style of the team, maybe it does make a little bit more sense to have him higher up, because one, we play so direct that he'd be able to pick the ball in a ideal world. He's picking the ball up off the striker and then he's being able to drive with it and then pick his passes. But also, similar to what we were talking about with Koen Vargas, I think that they like the athlete that they're getting in that position for the out of possession stuff. The idea that he can have the athleticism to close down certain areas with him and Ajimang up top, and then two kind of figuring out the technical stuff with it, both pretty young players. I think they like what they're getting from that perspective there. I was a little bit disappointed with how he played, just because I think he's very good technically very good player, and I think he just missed on a couple areas and he made a couple bad decisions. But again, it's a full debut playing in a position that isn't really one that he's overly familiar with, so I'm happy to kind of give him a pass on that. Looking a little bit further back in the midfield, it's Jibril Diani and Ashley Westwood, which I think people are pretty happy with that pair. They're both a pair of players who people like, and they like the qualities that they bring. The only thing that I have is that there is a little bit of an issue between them, whereby you're getting such a stark contrast from the two of them, where Diani's like a very good athlete at this who has struggled with some of the passing stuff. Like, he's not very quick with the passing stuff. Sometimes technically, like, it's off. Like, he had an opportunity to slide in a player on the weekend, and just kind of the pass was off. It was a sort of day late, dollar short kind of pass. But the athlete that you get at the position is great. Compare that with Ashley Westwood, who at his peak and even last season was really good at the box stuff, getting up, getting down. That's seen a little bit of a fall off so far. But the reason why he's in the team is because the technical stuff is so high. You see it with the goal that he scored a couple of weeks ago. You see it with just his general passing. Like, he can thread a nice 15, 20-yard pass when the opportunity arises and we are kind of deciding to play through the midfield because the opposition's structure dictates that it's a good thing for us to do in Dean Smith's head. So that contrast is so stark that you think, oh, that's brilliant in the midfield, or you get the balance of, oh, this guy does this guy does that. But their roles in this team are actually like quite similar. It's not, like I say, with Petkovic, we don't have a direct six who drops in there on his own and picks the ball up. They kind of take it in turns to occupy that space, whether the ball's on one side, and take it in turns to push another one up. So the fact that their roles are so similar, but their skill sets are so different, it does lead to us, we do feel a little bit erratic in midfield. And this isn't really me having a go at the players. This is a little bit of questioning the system, and you know, whether we're getting the best out of those two players by deploying them the way that we are. I don't know if that is something that you agree with, just that it does seem like there's a real stark contrast in their skill sets.
So something I want to bring to light here is when we originally were talking about Nikola Petkovic, you were right, we all essentially slotted him into the six. And what that meant for most of us is that we would be able to push Ashley Westwood forward, that we would be able to get him back to a more aggressive position where, instead of slotting those 10-15 yard balls into, you know, like a secondary attacking line, he was slotting them into people who were going to be creating danger. Obviously, that's not what's happened immediately. It doesn't mean it can't happen in the future, just not what we have seen, right? I guess my thought process coming in is, and I think I'll go to you, Josh, with this one. In every game, there seems to be about 30 minutes, 30 to 40 minutes, where Ashley Westwood is bombing runs up the field to get into the attack. And when he is bombing those runs and he's linking further up the field and he has the pace to get back, Charlotte FC is succeeding. I mean, we are putting teams under real stress, actual honest pressure. And right about 30 minutes-ish, 40 minutes-ish, when Ashley Westwood suddenly stops making those bombing runs, is when it all starts to, I don't want to use the term fall apart, because we still maintain a pretty good structure. We're still much more stable than we theoretically were under Latanzio. Have you seen the same phenomenon of the Ashley Westwood bombing forward and you know, his position potentially higher?
Yeah, I've definitely seen the issue with the legs that you're talking about. And the optimist in me that I sometimes struggle to find hopes that maybe this is an early season struggle and he'll find his legs as the season goes on. That seems unlikely in a guy who's now, what, 33, 34? Mm-hmm. And that does worry me a little bit. I guess I would question what our long-term view of Petkovic is, because as you guys alluded to, we all expected him to be a little bit further back. I did, however, look at Petkovic's heat map from his time in the Mozart Bet Super League, which great name for the Serbian league. And it's a little further back than he played against Cincinnati, but I was a little bit surprised at sort of his positioning when he was over there. So I'm not sure if maybe this six that we're envisioning him is not quite what he is, and maybe they're envisioning him more as an eight, and maybe this is a way to get him into the team without putting the full responsibility. I tend to agree with you that if we could have Westwood further up the pitch, then that would make me feel a little bit better, because I want his incisive passing there rather than deeper. And I would also hope, or maybe think, that it would save his legs a little bit if we could take some of that defensive responsibility off of him.
So I'll stick with you for this question, Josh. And that is, based on everything we have just said, we see the reemergence of the Brony Bro. Brant Bronico does return in this game, and say whatever you like about Brant Bronico, every manager he's played under has loved him. Yeah. We know he's got the engine legs. We know he will do what he's told. You know, do you see Brant Bronico as somebody who could be coming in shortly and potentially taking back one of these positions, or is he fighting for a place and for both things, where?
I think he's fighting for a place. I will also say, I think my preference would be to see a couple games of a Diagara, Westwood, Diani midfield to see where that gets us. But I do think that Bronico offers an interesting use case, because I think you could potentially play him a little bit higher up and have him do the running that maybe Westwood can't anymore. Mm-hmm. I think what complicates this is also the idea of, what does captaincy mean to a team, right? Because Westwood is the captain, and so that makes it feel like he's not likely to come out of this side. If he weren't the captain, part of me wonders if the question would be if Bronico or Petkovic would be breathing down his neck a little bit more. But that seems very unlikely to me. And considering we just bought Diani, it also seems unlikely that he's not going to get a real run in this team. So for me, it's really that third position that maybe Brecht, Nikola Petkovic, and Bronico are going to be pushing each other for, health provided, because obviously, you know, we've had a lot of injuries that have moved pieces around.
Hey, I look forward to seeing it. I love competition. Ewan, is there anything you want to add on this midfield discussion? Again, words so hard. before we really dive into Diani and ultimately him taking the penalty.
Yeah, I should have mentioned it myself, probably, the fact that Bronico came on and, again, he's coach's pet. Like, he's someone who's going to find a way to make a role for himself in the team. And to be honest, with the way that we have redefined a lot of these midfield roles, I wouldn't be shocked if Dean Smith had a fully fit Brent Bronico at his disposal, if he was the player who played where Petkovic did, just to, you know, provide those legs in the counter press to be available for the second balls. Really, you can make a case for him taking any of the three places, not in terms of like, oh, he'll go there and he's the better player necessarily, but he has skills that fit those roles, which again speaks to why he's always been someone who played a lot for other coaches, because he's very adaptable. He has a skill set that is not that high across the board, but is very competent across the board. And he's just very good out of possession, which most coaches love. So yeah, it's going to be interesting to see if he can find a way into this team, because the way Dean Smith set us up, I think if we get him back to full fitness, he's someone who is going to contribute probably just as much as he has done in the past two seasons.
Yeah, let's talk Jabril Gianni, because I think that he is getting some flowers that he deserves. But I also think that it's probably a good idea for us to maybe step back a little bit from the hype train too early. And that is, I really like what I'm seeing out of Jabril Gianni. I feel like I have seen him progress each time he comes onto the field. With every 30 minutes he plays, he seems a little bit more comfortable. Like, he knows his space a little bit better. Like, he knows where he can pass the ball and move the ball off to a little bit more. He feels more at home at Charlotte. And I'm really excited to see that, because that's a really quick turnaround for a player. That is somebody who, within three matches, is looking and playing like somebody who is a Charlotte FC player and deserves to be here. I love seeing the dynamism. I love seeing the legs in the midfield. I do think that he has some passing, I'm not going to call them concerns, because I think he's a decent passer, but I think he could step up in his passing ability. I really enjoyed seeing him hit the penalty, seeing him put that penalty in, because I do think that it will give him a lot of grace with the fans and a lot of benefit for his time here. The one thing I want to talk about the penalty is credit to Ashley Westwood, who does a captain's move, and he goes over there and he takes the ball, and he's the one jawing off at people, and he's the one taking other people's, psych outs. And then when it comes time to take the actual penalty, Ashley Westwood hands the ball off. So let's start with Ewan for this one. Ewan, what do you think about the penalty and about Gianni's performance in general?
I'll say that for the Westwood, the thing that you see in football where someone else holds the penalty, holds the ball for the penalty and kind of takes the mind games. Like, what a team to be doing it, because like, there's no psyching out. Like, they have no idea who's going to actually take it. So you really can't, like, it's not like other teams do it and you know who's eventually going to have the ball, and it's kind of, it doesn't really work. Like with us, like, yeah, all 11 players have got the hat in the ring for taking it.
Christian Colina runs up.
Yeah, exactly. And I imagine there's probably quite a lot of people who are disappointed in the end that Westwood didn't take it. I know that because it's been such an issue that people just say, I'll put the captain on it, put the most experienced player, put the player who's got a good technical floor. But yeah, obviously he was just taking the mind games at the end. Gianni takes it, when in doubt, down the middle. You can't really say much more than that. It's a confident thing to do, and yeah, fair play to him. It's something which has bugged us a lot. It's one of the reasons why when you look at our XG, it's so much higher than our actual goals. If you look into the non-penalty stuff, it kind of refines it a little bit. But yeah, it was just there was that minute in between it being given and it being scored where you were just kind of thinking, we can't miss another one, because then we really are in a tough spot.
But you and we could have missed another one. So,
oh yeah,
we celebrate our heroes.
exactly. So yeah, don't want to give too much credit overall for him scoring a penalty, because you know you should be expected to do it. But within the context, it was a lot of pressure on it, and just want to make sure that I'm giving him sufficient flowers, because I'm kind of feeling a little bit more down on him than I think people generally are. So I want to give him a bit of credit where I can. I think the main concern with this stuff, and you only see pieces of this from his performance, because, again, this is almost, we end up talking about more the overall philosophy and the game model than we do the individual players when we're talking about the players. because Dean Smith at the moment is trying to remove as much action from the game as possible. He's trying to turn it into a margins game. And one of the easiest ways to remove action from the game is to make it remove as much transition as possible. Keep the game in controlled settings and make sure that the game's always in front of you. So removing transitions, what does that do? Well, it removes one of the things that Diani was really good at on the game tape that I watched ahead of his signing. And obviously it's not something that would surprise anyone that someone with his athletic profile is really good at snuffing out counterattacks. That'll be something which maybe as the game model evolves will come in a little bit more. But at the moment, some of his stronger areas are not being shown off as much by the factor by how we're setting up. So part of this is not really his fault. Like, his skill set is not entirely being suited by the game plan, but that's not a knock on Dean Smith, because obviously the game plan is working at the moment. We're controlling games to a decent extent and our XG numbers are coming out really well. It's just a matter of kind of how things are working at the moment. The other part of his game, which you'd think would suit a little bit better, is just kind of the general, like, the pressing element of his game. And there's a bit of a funny thing at the moment with the way that his pressing triggers work, in that we've played two games against teams setting up with that, mostly with that 3-2 build up with the wing backs getting wide and kind of pushing quite high. So we've had two games in a row, definitely the last game and for the most part of the game before, where that's the setup, and we have kind of matched it by bringing up a certain amount of players to play pretty high with them. We've had issues on the back end of that with the rest of the team, but that's been the setup out of possession in their build-up structure when the opposition have the ball and they're building up in the first phase. Gianni's pressing trigger is not to, like, immediately go to one of the pivot players that he's assigned. It's almost more, it's like a second off, so that as the player who's looking to receive the ball is scanning and has a look over his shoulder, Gianni's sitting. But then as the ball's coming in, as soon as Diani knows that he has had his look and Diani sat in there, then he's going in there and pressing him. So you're taking away his physical attributes a little bit by not just letting him get after him and get, you know, get after the ball. It's a little bit more refined. But I just thought that was kind of interesting that that's what we're using at the moment, because you think someone with his size, maybe you just want him on him immediately rather than doing it that way. But still, I get that's why it's working. I mean, I say all this to say that Diani hasn't impressed me too much in these games overall, but that what I say there with his pressing trigger, what I say with the fact that we're not playing very transitional games, a lot of it's to do with the fact that his skill set, he's not getting to show off the full range in the way that we're setting up at the moment. So it's just, you know, he's not impressing me massively at the moment, but his best skills he's not been able to showcase.
Yeah. Josh, do you want to get on this one before we push on to the Enzo Capetti talks?
Yeah, I think with Diani, for me, and we've talked about this before, his ceiling is going to be what his passing ends up being. It's something that we talked about before he came. I would hope that maybe once he gets comfortable in MLS and comfortable in this league and comfortable with the team, that we would see the passing a little bit quicker. And maybe a little bit more range on it, because it really is something where it's a frustration point for me for a couple years now, the lack of sort of incisive passing from our midfield outside of maybe one or two players. And if he can't bring that, then it just feels like it kind of caps our overall potential. At the end of the day, as you said, he seems to have adjusted really well. I would say I would hope that would happen from a guy with his experience, but it's not an easy thing. So, you know, some guys do take longer, and it appears that he's settling in very, very quickly, which is good. And that shouldn't be overlooked. But for me, it's been three games. Again, I just want to see more. And I also want to see more games when he's not playing the best teams in the league, because that also, I do think, could factor into this a little bit too, right? Like, two of his first few games have been against Cincinnati and Columbus, and both of those clubs have very good teams and very good midfield players. So maybe, you know, we have an opportunity with New England and New York coming up, to few teams that have gone off to rockier starts. Maybe we see a little bit more of what Diani can bring us in games where maybe the competition is a little bit lower.
Yeah.
Can I drop in there as well? Just generally, you mentioned there, it's a really good point that his two games have been against two really good teams. Two things that if we play against teams who are a little bit lesser, that'll do. One, we know what our general game model is. Maybe we can always refine it. It adjusts to our opponent. If we play lesser opposition and we're more attacking, that opens up the transition stuff where he can show that off a little bit more if we're playing a team that we're a little bit less conservatively set up against. And also the fact that we've played two teams who have been very aggressive in getting up against the ball. If we're playing against teams who, like we've done, sit back a little bit more conservatively, we can get a better idea of Diani's passing range, something I'm a little bit concerned about, something that is not the strongest part of his game. But again, if we see him against some lesser opposition, he's got a little bit more time and to kind of control the rhythm of his passing and pick things out. Yeah, it's a great point. We play lesser opposition, we'll get a better idea of him as a midfielder, 100%.
So before we go ahead to the Enzo Capetti talk and some talk about Leo Labata, I'm gonna jump in and say thank you to our sponsors, because they help keep the show running. So thank you so much to DraftKings Sportsbook. The wait is over. DraftKings Sportsbook is an official sports betting partner of NASCAR, is now live in North Carolina. Now you can legally bet on all of your favorite sports anytime, anywhere, right here in North Carolina with DraftKings. For a limited time, new customers who sign up with promo code QCPN and bet $5 will receive $200 instantly in bonus bets. DraftKings has the best features, including same-game parlays, player props, and more, with fast and easy payouts right at your fingertips. Now, Charlotte FC is about to be playing New England Revolution, and as always, thank you so much, Josh, we have the line. And that is, New England is at 120, a draw is at plus 240, and Charlotte is at plus 195, perhaps numbers you will need to know. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now, using code QCPN and bet $5 to get $200 instantly in bonus bets. Only on DraftKings Sportsbook with code QCPN. The crown is yours. Gambling problem? Call 877-1855-43 or visit morethanagame.nc.gov. 21 plus, North Carolina only. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. Deposit and eligibility restrictions apply. Terms at DraftKings.com/sportsbook/NC. NASCAR is not a sponsor of this promotion and is used under license. That's it. Thank you so much to DraftKings Sportsbook. If you, dear listener, would like to get these shows without the ads, you can find us on Patreon, or you can find us at Patreon.com/TheCrownCast, where we post all these without the ads. And that way you don't you can skip that that little section of the show. What we are going to go into now is, I think I'm going to start with Josh on this one, because Josh, I know that you're so excited to talk about Enzo Capetti again. I know that deep down in your soul, this is what you've been looking forward to. Enzo Capetti has the moment, comes in late in this game, and he has the one that everybody has taken a still of. And I will come out and say, I think the still is very unfair to Enzo Capetti. I think if all you have is that one snapshot of a moment, it looks super easy. And if you go back and you look at what he has done in order to get there, it's not that easy. Even if he could have taken more of the opportunity in an ideal world. The fires are raging on Enzo Capetti. Josh, how are you feeling?
I am feeling that we are six games into this season and I am already over the Enzo versus Pat discussion, to be completely honest. I want to quickly say that my stance is, if you are blaming Enzo Capetti for the goal that is then scored, I find that to be a ridiculous take. He is an attacker who has lost the ball in the opponent's box. Regardless of whether you think he should have done better or not, it is the 91st minute. He has lost it in their box. Them going down and scoring is no longer on Enzo. That is on our defense. That is on our midfield. That is on a lot of other factors. With that out of the way, my big thing with this team and with this striker position is I don't think Enzo or Patrick Adjiman are doing enough right now. We are the only team in the East that does not have a multi-goal scorer. As Ewan alluded to a little while ago, our XG numbers look really good. I think we're like second or third in the East in XG numbers. But that's been built off the back of like three penalties. When you take those away, all of a sudden we drop to like 10th in the East. This team and our record so far has largely been built on defensive stability, I think, that Dean Smith has implemented, and good structure. And that is a good thing because you need that, as we saw last year when we gave away tons of games. Offensively, and there are a lot of reasons, injuries chief among them, this team, I feel like, from open play is struggling. And that has been whoever's played at striker. Yes, Patrick Adjiman has a goal. Yes, Enzo Cabetti doesn't have a goal. But when you look at their individual XG numbers, when you look at their numbers on a per 90 basis, there is not a lot that has separated them when it comes to goal scoring, other than that one in that zero. And again, I just feel like as the Crown Cast, we've talked a lot about Enzo and we've made our feelings known about him. And nothing I have seen over the past few games without him and with Patrick Adjiman has changed my mind that I think he's a better option for us currently. That does not mean that he is the perfect option for us for the next 5 years. That just means right now in April of 2024, I would be starting Enzo Cappetti, health permitting, and I would have no second thoughts about that.
So, Ewan, I'm going to go across to you and I'm going to give you a little bit more information. And that is, you know, this discussion raging on social media. Discussion is a polite way to put it because social media. But when we had the Liel Abada player press conference, I got the time to sit down with Zoran Granetta very briefly. And I asked Zoran, I said, can you give me a quote on Enzo Cappetti? Obviously, there's a lot of talk going on. There's a lot of discourse around him. And Zoran looked at me and he said, I have no worries about Enzo Cappetti. He's going to come good. He is going to score goals. He's doing everything we're asking of him. And once he scores goals, he's not going to stop. That's a bold statement. I think you could say that's an outright bold statement. Would you call that the dreaded vote of confidence? Or would you say that that is potentially genuine?
I think the dreaded vote of confidence is when it comes a little bit unprompted, isn't it? I think, he's the name and the person that a lot of people care about a lot because he's DP and people feel like he's not performing. If they were going actively out their way to keep talking about it, then that's when you get into that territory of it's like, they obviously see this as a problem internally, so they're looking to address it outwardly. You asking the question about Cappetti and him giving a bold reply and backing him is, I think they're watching the same game that I am pretty much. He came on in this game and I thought he did really well in the circumstances. Like it's a different game state. It doesn't look the same as the other 70 or so minutes that the from before he came on, but again, saw the things that I really like from him. Abada gets a chance in this game, a little half chance, off the back of Cappetti being able to track a long ball really well, bring it down, hold the ball up and lay it off to Abada. That's one of them instances with Adjiman where that's a turnover and the opposition now have the ball in the building back up against us. And not only are we now kind of surrendering possession, but also it's surrendering pressure. We're not getting that established field position. And Dean Smith football that we've seen so far is all about the control. It's about making sure that the opposition is pushed back as far as possible and we are in control of the game. And one thing Cappetti brings, if it's not at the moment, it hasn't been goals, but it's definitely been control. It's been control when he's been playing. But the goals are the important thing. and that's what you pay for. It's similar to the Vargas conversation. He's had a lot of chances. I have a lot of confidence that it'll positively regress as long as the chances are coming. The main thing on this is, one, I completely agree with Josh in the fact that blaming him for this goal is very silly. I think if you're blaming him for this goal, you've kind of already decided that you were going to look to blame him for something. And this is what has transpired to be the thing that you're looking to blame him for. But he creates the chance, really, mostly on his own. Like, he receives a good pass and the ball's been brought forward in a little bit of a transitional situation. He beats a man to get into the box. And then, yeah, does he take a little bit too much time on the ball? Should he be a little bit sharper? Yeah, he can make that criticism. But he's made the chance, firstly, for himself. And then also, as Josh says, there's a lot of things happening from that point to the point where they score. And we're going to talk about their goal in a little bit more detail. And that's what, you know, we're going to talk about those extra layers to this, which, you know, you'd think from the way that people speak about this, this was a like a deep lying midfielder who got caught on the ball. It happened in the opposition box. It's again, it's an example of something where if you want to be harsh on Capetti, you can say, yeah, you want to have him either making a better decision or getting a shot off. Blaming him outright for the goal is a little bit silly, but you know, when you get people who care about things in a major way, this is kind of what happens. You get these kind of debates, and I suppose what we try and do is bring that back down to earth a little bit. But yeah, I second a lot of what Josh says, and especially the part where I think we're better with him starting in the number nine.
So let's move ahead to the Cincinnati goal, because they do ultimately transition off of that moment. And yes, it is going to leave a sour taste in a lot of people's mouth that it could, of what it could have been to what it ended up being. But the transition move is quite good. And I'm not going to say the defending on this is perfect, because the defending is not perfect. But there are times in which I have stated in the past, and I will continue to state, that the opposition gets to play good too. It is a very good transition. And if you look, their attacking wing gets a half step on Adilson Milanda. It's a really good move to do so. He does a great job to get that step. And then I actually think Adilson Milanda does a great job closing him down. I think Adilson Milanda is second favorite for that race and somehow manages to get it back to a 50-50. In that instance, if you look across the pitch, we have two defenders. And my first instinct is one of them should be at the front post or should be near-ish covering the run to the front post. The other one should be covering either back post or watching for runners coming in. It is a late runner coming in, but it's an amazing little back cut ball from the front post that takes it away from both the front post defender and Christian Kolina. It happens at lightning speed in order for this ball to get pulled back to the penalty spot where it's pretty easily slotted in. I mean, Brek Diagara might miss it, but the whole setup the whole setup of this goal is done spectacularly, even to the point where the person running across the face of the goal is intentionally drawing, at least it looks to be intentionally drawing, Yerde Urdanen away from his position. And Yerde has to go with him. He can't just abandon the runner because he's too far away to pass him off. Sometimes Cincinnati is good, and for most of this, I see it as Cincinnati being quite good. Josh, do you want to talk about this? Tell me if you see something different.
Yeah, I agree with you on Milanda. I think Milanda's beat, but I don't really have any qualms with the way he kind of holds up the attacker. With Urdanen on the back, what I think, and this is just sort of me reading into the situation, might be very wrong, but the player that's running across the face of the goal is DeAndre Yedlin. And Yedlin, if nothing else, has always and continues to be quick. And for my money, it looks like he's just a little quicker than maybe Urdanen expects, which for a guy who we have to remember also only has, what, like 12-ish, 10-ish appearances in Major League Soccer, like maybe not that surprising. If I'm going to point to anything, and it feels harsh because for the most part, I agree with you. I think that this is Cincinnati good as opposed to too much of Charlotte bad. I do wish that Byrne tracks the run of their number nine, who has quickly shot also to the top of my I do not like you players in MLS. If you look back on it, I think Byrne can do a little bit better with that.
He does kind of end up in the middle of nowhere, doesn't he? Also, Josh, you've gone mute.
Sorry. I think Byrne is trying to maybe prevent the cutback with Milanda, trying to help out there. Again, these are small nitpicks. I think that this is very much a good Cincinnati goal, and sometimes that just happens. And sometimes you have to be upset and kind of just keep telling yourself that, hey, we got a point off the best team in the East right now, and keep repeating that until it kind of drives away the sour taste of losing the other two.
You and you want in on this one?
Yeah, Burn, he is doing a decent job of cutting off the angle of a potential cutback, whilst also kind of being there as kind of secondary support for Melander in that area. So I get what he's doing there. Like, it kind of, the result of the goal makes it look like he ends up in a little bit of no man's land, but he is doing a decent job of kind of cutting off the cutback, as well as, you know, kind of not doubling up, but I suppose one and a halfing up the player who cuts in behind, and applying that pressure of him knowing that, okay, Melander's got the byline. If he wants to come back a little bit, I'm here to support in that area. The way that it finds its way to their player, and the fact that Burn can't cut it out, is, like you say, DeAndre Yedlin making that run. You can debate the run to a certain extent, and who tracks that, and whether the communication should be better. But ultimately, the flick is very high quality stuff. It's very high quality awareness and the technical ability to plate it up like perfectly for him without him having to adjust or take a touch, which brings extra players in. It's very high level. The first thing you said on this, Logan, is you know, the other team, they get the opportunity to be good as well. You know, they get paid as well. And this is an example of that. Like, Melander gets a little bit wrong-sided on the ball through, does a good job of recovering, but doesn't deny the cross getting through in the first instance. Like, what do we want to do? Do we want to say that Adilson Melander is at fault for the goal? Like, no, he's not really at fault for the goal. He's done a decent job of doing his role. They've just kind of, you know, they've connected well. They've managed to get the better of him to a, you know, a little degree. And the ball finds its way to, is it Bupenza who scores, isn't it? I know you mentioned that, Josh.
Bupenza.
Off of his antics, I have no intention of putting his name.
Well, I was going to say, yeah, he shall not be named after a few incidents in that game. I know he's kind of riling up the crowd a little bit.
Wait, I have to ask. Will you two be upset if I take the low-hanging fruit?
No.
Go ahead.
Oh, in that case, Bupenza.
Oh, there we go. Yeah.
I mean, I warned you.
I changed my mind.
Yeah, take it back.
No take back, please.
No, it's a good goal. It's well worked. I see that goal, and I can see little areas where, okay, if we'd have done really well, we could have denied it. But I just... yeah, fair play. They've worked a good goal. Hard to add anything more than that from a Charlotte perspective, in that, and I mean, if you want to make one more point on it, it goes back to the fact that people were blaming Capetti for this. Like, they had to do a lot right to make this goal happen. And there were layers to it. The run behind against Melander, we know how hard it is to get in behind Melander. We know how hard it is to get a ball past Melander. The flick is really good. And then the finish is pretty, you know, it's plated up pretty well. It's an open goal, but from our experience, we know open goals aren't really gimmies. So, a lot has to happen. And I don't really have any major issues with this. I said at the time, yeah, it's a pretty beautiful goal, and disappointing that it happened in the last minute and cost us 2 points, but I don't really have much issue with it from our perspective.
Yeah, I think the takeaway is that Charlotte FC played this match quite well. And, if you look at the actual XG, probably a draw would have been a fair result. But we will leave that stadium feeling like we lost 2 points, not we won 1 point. And that always leaves us with a little bit of bitter taste in our mouths. I'm going to step ahead because Liel Labada also makes his debut, is wearing the debut patch for this one. We also had his player signing event, which we referenced earlier, and we got to see him come out and speak. It was an interesting event from my perspective, because the general body language of Liel Labada looks like somebody who landed in America 5 days ago and has been thrown from one place to the other at bullet train speeds. He doesn't look comfortable here yet. And I'm not sure I would expect him to be. I think my thought process as I was going through and listening to the questions I was hearing was, this guy has really big shoes to fill. not so much in that the previous shoes were, you know, of someone great, but we have had a DP and a big money signing and a big name on that wing effectively fail just before him. And now he's coming in with a lot of that pressure. We haven't had a winger on that side, or really on any side, who we felt like was the star of the team, was the guy who was going to get it done every time. And with the money we've spent on him, with the hype around him, I think that there is going to be an element of that's his job, is to hit the ground running. So, Ewan, from your perspective, how do you see Leo Labada's first performance, and what are your thoughts around him as he's coming into the team?
We've spoken about him a little bit already. This was obviously the first example of seeing him in a Charlotte jersey. But we've kind of made our thoughts clear on him from a technical perspective and other areas. And I think you saw a little bit of it in this game. Like there's a technical flaw that you'd like to be a little bit higher because you see his two shots forced onto his right on both, I believe. And they're both a little bit limp. One of them balloons a little bit over the bar. The other one is not very threatening and is quite easily blocked. But you also see the side of his game where I think about 3 minutes after he comes on, he manages to get the ball in transition and force not only a foul in a dangerous position, but also it's kind of the example of a defender taking the foul because he's so dangerous running with the ball in transition that he'd rather just, you know, bring the man down, take a yellow card and go from there. So I think that was his obvious big highlight from the game, seeing him run with the ball there against a player with a bigger size to him. And that's the stuff that'll be his bread and butter. If we can find those transition moments to get him running out in space, that's how we'll get the best of him. Celtic did a really good job of manufacturing those moments for him. The most I watched of him was not from this season, when obviously things he came outside for a little bit this season, but it was more when Ange Postecoglou was the head coach. He's really good at creating those manufactured transitional moments, whereby you're not playing in transition literally a lot because the opposition is surrendering a lot of possession to you. So you have to find ways of manufacturing that space in behind. And then obviously if game state changes, you can get it from those situations. We may have to do a little bit of that ourselves, because I don't know how many teams are going to give us a load of space, knowing the kind of things that we want to do in our game model. So there'll be a big adjustment with that. The other thing as well, first thing we spoke about here was Kerwin Vargas, and you know, talking about his finishing, talking about other parts of his game. You gave a load of credit to him laying out those stats of him, you know, blocks, clearances, interceptions, the overall defensive role that wingers have to fulfill in this team. And you also spoke about the fact that he's a pretty big winger. He's nearly 6 foot. He's got the athletic profile to be able to do that. It's going to be interesting how much we adjust and whether we just trust Abada to be able to fulfill that at his size and with his, you know, just kind of bank that his athleticism will get him through, or if we adjust things a little bit and get men in that area to help him out. That's going to be really fascinating because, yeah, it's a tough role to be a winger in this team defensively, and yeah, we'll have to wait and see if he's up for it.
I think it's funny that you point that out, because there have been quite a few social media posts of him posing next to Zoran Krenetta, where he does look like Zoran Krenetta is introducing his 16-year-old child to a group of people. He is not super tall. Josh, I'm going to go to you, but I've reversed it this time. This time I'm going to add context for you that Ewan didn't have. Yeah, look at me changing up the styles.
Yes.
I did get to briefly talk with Zoran about Leo Labada, as well as with head coach Dean Smith. And I have a couple of quotes for you. And that is, I asked, how do you feel about Leo Labada, and should we be expecting him to hit the ground running? And Zoran Krenetta's response was, he needs time. Physically, he's not fit for 90 minutes. All transitions take time, and we're looking forward to seeing him grow into Charlotte. Very professional answer. Very Zoran Krenetta. Dean Smith's response to the same question was, I don't know if he's ready to hit the ground running, but what I saw in his 30-minute performance is that he is very close.
Mm.
So not necessarily, you know, two sides of the coin, but perhaps one who is more interested in him being a key part of the team quicker, especially now having, you know, these two quotes with you. What are you looking at with Leo?
So my expectation, and I'm always terrible with these predictions when, you know, talking about crystal balls at the beginning of this show, but I feel like his first start is not going to be this week against New England, but it'll be the following week when we're back at the bank. I believe we play Toronto that week. And that would seem to make sense to give his starting debut there. Those quotes sort of feel like, and I let me be careful saying this, but feels sort of like the investor saying something and then the person who gets the thing, right? Yeah. Like the investor wants this in mint condition. The person who's going to use it is like, no, you bought me this expensive toy. I want to play with it, right? So like with that, obviously as a fan, I'm hoping it's more of Dean Smith's side, because again, I think his inclusion to this side can change a lot. Again, it puts Vargas on the left where we talked about he's better, puts Breck Diagara back in the middle where I feel he's better. So there's a domino effect of him coming into this team. And I did also want to quickly touch on your point about, you know, the DP designation. I would kind of argue that so far Charlotte has not had a DP that as a whole, the fan base has gone behind. Even amongst us, Karo Swiderski, you know, Ewan loved him. I liked him. You were a little bit cooler on him, right? Yuzhwyak obviously had the issues. We're seeing the issues with Enzo. I think that this fan base is desperate for the name that they can put on the back of the jersey, right? Because you don't want to buy a jersey for a guy who ends up being terrible. You don't want to buy a jersey for a guy who ends up leaving in 6 months. And that's what this, I hope, happens, is that this is a guy who, as a fan base, we can say, yeah, he is killing it. And there is no argument. The only argument is, how do we prevent him from going back to Europe or back to a different league?
Yeah, I think that we all certainly want the best for Liel. And hopefully we get to see more of him soon, because, I mean, he is going to end up being dynamic and fun to watch. Now I just want him to be dynamic, fun to watch, and score goals. Let's go ahead and look at his first opportunity to score goals. Second opportunity to score goals? It would be a lie if I said the first. And that is our game against New England. Josh, tell us, how are we going to score our 10 goals against New England?
Well, so far it hasn't been an issue scoring goals against New England. They've allowed 11 on the season. They have not gone off to a good start. Part of that, I would say, is the typical, if you're an MLS team and you are in the CONCACAF Champions League, a lot of times there are early season struggles. There was a little thought that maybe we'd be lucky because our match is sandwiched in between their CONCACAF Champions League. However, Club America went to Gillette Stadium and thrashed them 4-0, so it feels like the attention for them would probably be shifting back to MLS rather than Champions League. It feels unlikely they're going to be able to go to Mexico and score and enough goals to come out of that tie. So I'm interested to see. I still think New England's a good team. They still have really good players. Charles Hill is always and forever going to be at the top of that. He's another guy who I know Charlotte fans don't necessarily like because they feel that he goes over a little bit too easy. I would just point out that he is listed at 5'7", is probably closer to 5'5". He is a tiny man. He is going to go over a lot of times. The point is, he is consistently going to score goals and make goals happen. Just like with Lucho, who we saw with Cincinnati, Lucho Acosta. For me, the game plan has to start with, how do you deal with Hill? How do you make sure that he doesn't have as much time on the ball as he wants? How do you prevent him from popping up into good positions? Other players I'll be looking at, their striker is Giacomo Veroni, who hit the ground running last year, but only ended up scoring 6 goals last year. He is still fairly young. I think that there's talent there. And then one of my favorite players that is not a Charlotte player in the league is DeJuan Jones, a fullback for New England. He's an attacking fullback. He's very, very good. As with most attacking fullbacks, he's also someone who you could potentially pick on a little bit when he does go forward, if you can get in behind him in some transition moments. But he's a guy who he consistently has about 5 to 7 assists in the league. And so he's someone who you don't want to really to give time on the ball to, because he can hurt you from those wide areas. But again, so, Hill is going to be the big one.
So, Josh, I hear a lot of their danger. How is Charlotte going to get in and make good inroads?
Well, Charlotte's going to get in because we're finally going to have a full full front line of Abada, Vargas, and Enzo. No, like I said, I think when you go to New England and you go, or you go to any team really, is they tend to want to have more of the ball. New England does want the ball a lot. They're 58% possession on the season. So I think we need to look for those transition moments. You need to look to get in behind their fullbacks when those fullbacks push up. Taking the ball off of them in the midfield and quickly releasing Vargas, Diagara, whoever it is that else that's going to be on the wing. If Enzo's healthy enough to play, again, we've talked about his hold-up play is usually pretty good, so getting a quick ball out to him to allow guys to join him in the attack. I just don't foresee us having a lot of possession this game, and so I think you're going to have to make the most of the opportunities that you do get when you find the ball.
All right, Ewan, anything you want to touch on for this upcoming game?
I hate playing teams in these situations. It's the fact that their form to start the season has been so bad, and like they are not that bad of a team overall. Like I know that, you know, they're not, you know, someone who maybe you would consider as
Ewan. I'm sorry to cut across you, buddy, but please, please don't say that Charlotte is going to be New England's get right game. The silence means that's where he is going.
Well, it's just, yeah, I feel like I've seen this type of game a lot of times before, not involving Charlotte, where you get the team that is not as bad as their record reflects. They're playing at home, and it just kind of all lines up as to where it's a tough game to play. Like, outside of anything else, like playing on the road in MLS is tough. Playing against a team that's desperate for a result is tough. Put that all together and link, you know, everything, and us coming off the back of two tough games, even though they were both at home and one was played for an extended period against 10 men, playing against two really good teams, it's just a tough spot. And I'll kind of flip it a little bit as to, rather than me seeming negative going into this game, almost use that as an opportunity to say, okay, if this is a draw, don't see it as, oh, we just drew to the team that had 1 point from five games coming into it. I'm almost, you know, contextualizing a little bit as to say, like, this is not going to be an easy game. This is going to be tough. And looking at their record just from this season does a disservice to how tough it will be. So if we draw this game, which, you know, is likely, it could well happen, I'm not going to be too disappointed. It's a tough spot to play a team in. They'll be right up for it. And yeah, just it's not going to be any walk in the park against a team ranked last right now in the East, I believe.
All right, Josh, you get 30 seconds and then we're doing predictions.
Yeah. The last thing I'll say is I'm looking at the weather. The weather also doesn't look great. We're talking, there's chance of snow, rain, precipitation. This could end up being a sloppy game. And I've been to that stadium to watch Charlotte play when it's been wet and cold, and it is not a good time for anyone. So that's another factor to this, but that might also help us.
So I'm going to go ahead then, because if we have the weather on our side, because bad weather is ultimately a leveler of all things, and everybody's going to have a bad time, I assume it's everyone who's going to have a bad time that's there, which is going to be primarily New England Revolution fans. So I will start my prediction with a 1-0 win. I like what I see from our defense. This is a team that has allowed goals. I realize that might be a bit reductive, but I think we're due one on the road. I would love to see it 1-0 from me. Ewan, what's your prediction?
Yeah, it's the flip side. Yeah, if we can get an early goal in this game, then a team that's in their position, home advantage goes out the window a little bit, because that the fan base could well turn. So if we're able to get that, great. I could see us kicking on. I'm going to go for 1-1. I just, and maybe it seems like a little bit of a cop-out based off what I just said. It feels like I was angling towards a New England win, but I do think we have enough in us and we have enough ability to control a game to be able to get a decent result from this. And also, obviously, if the weather gets involved, then a draw is a pretty safe way to go. So, yeah, I can see this being 1-1, and it's not a result that I would be mad at.
All right, Josh, what are you thinking?
I'm going 2-1 to us, and the reverse of when I saw a game there where there was a late-ish winner for them, I think that there ends up being a late-ish winner for us.
Pretty positive from the Crowncast today. That's a change-up. That's a curveball.
They allow goals, and it could be a get-right game for them, but they do allow goals.
Hey, we will hope that that the positivity here at the Crowncast is correct. But most importantly, what we're going to do is say thank you to you, dear listener. As ever, if you have decided to spend your time with us, we love you. Thank you so much. It means the world to us, and we love having you here. And thank you to Josh.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you, Ewan.
Always a pleasure. Thanks, guys.
And that's it, ladies and gentlemen. We will talk to you again when we go take our next 3 points from New England Revolution. Goodbye.
QueenCityPodcastNetwork.com.